Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 106 of the Pico Sorelli podcast.
Jesus.
getting up there. One of the podcasts that I watched had like episode number 357 this week, which is like, it's a lot of podcasting. One day. We need a couple more expansions for that. But I am, of course, Emilson, and my camera just zoomed out. And I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, actually, surprisingly, in some ways, a light week, or in a weird way, both a heavy week and a light week. We have a bunch of stuff, but not a lot of substance to any of it.
It's true.
There's some new expansion
leaks. The way I like it, by the way.
Yeah. We got a new expansion leak that seems actually, like, real. That we're going to talk a little bit about, but all we really have is the name and some concept art. We have no more news about season 4, which if you remember last week, we said we were going to hold off on talking about until we had more details, except we have a little bit more from a Morgan Day interview, which is actually that interview with Morgan Day is going to be the main, I think, subject of today's episode.
Yep.
But before we get into that, how is your progression going?
It's going, you know, it's moving forward. I think, we got down this week, Desogne and Zymox. We made some strat changes on old the sausage or Desogne, in terms of the way we treated rings. So we started out, and I think I talked a little bit about this last week, was we started out with the trying to jump two rings strat where like you hit one.
Yeah.
And then everybody is like Night Fae, Venthyr, whatever it ends up being, or anybody with a port, the ability to jump two rings whenever you get three or more. We're not good at that as a guild, just in general. So basically our raid leaders sort of took the time and we basically adjusted all of our positioning. So we did the fight entirely different from a positioning perspective, but it allowed us to basically take one ring at a time, which... healing was a little bit higher, but in general we lived, which was nice. So we got Desogne down in about an hour on, I guess, Tuesday, I'm sorry, we went in there one day this week. And then went over to Zymox and pulled Zymox for a little bit, got Zymox down in pretty epic fashion in terms of, like, I think we stumbled our way into the final phase. So after the final set of, or the second set of ads, with about, you know, probably 16, 17 people alive, and killed the fight with three people alive.
Nice.
Eventually got it down. That Zymox is actually a really fun fight.
I really like that fight. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a blast progressing it. And it was quick enough that, I mean, it's funny. It reminded me much of the Zymox from Castle, because that Zymox also had a really bad set of overlaps about 75% of the way through the fight. And once you got through that, as long as you had half your raid alive, like the fight eventually died. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good set of prog days. And then we got to do Pantheon for a little bit. Really just sort of testing out like a couple weak auras that we need to sort of nail down in terms of like assigning folks to marks. And then, just sort of look like working with the new mechanics. It doesn't seem too bad in terms of progression. Like that should be a quick, like another maybe hour and a half worth of pull time on it. And we get it down, but
I have stats. Let me go pull up what these stats are for, cause I'm pretty sure, you're underselling it, unfortunately.
Oh no.
Typical progression time. Actually, you're probably not by that much. If you spent like an hour, then it is, you know, another hour and a half would be at the 75th percentile for progression time. It is 2.7 to 4.9 hours currently for like the 25th to 75th percentile of progression time on that boss.
That's not too bad.
So it's like a solid raid night's worth of progression for a lot of guilds.
Yeah. Which is it seems about right for what we're doing. So Pantheon is Pantheon. I in general don't like Pantheon because I don't like healing NPCs, and that's what the seeds are. So that part sucks.
I am looking forward to doing this fight on a prop paladin at some point because I've done it on heroic on a prop paladin. and you can do disgusting things with the Hand of the Protector talent. It's the same thing as Kael'thas in Castle Nathria, where like early on in the fight, you just dump a wog into something and it just heals for like 150K.
Yeah.
Well, on Heroic, I literally like full healed a seed by pushing wog on it. And it was not entirely expected. I was like, well, I don't have anything else to do with this holy power. I might as well do that. And I was like, oh, oops. I definitely screwed up our seed timing, but it was okay because it was just Heroic. But that seems like something that would be fun to mess with on Mythic Farm.
That's funny. That's funny.
As far as our progression, like last week, we did get Dossane down. It was a complete mess. We weren't trying to do the double ring crossing like you guys were, but our boss positioning didn't really reflect that, and I didn't realize it until I went back and looked after the fact. Mm-hmm. Our boss positioning, I had based it on a guild that was doing the double ring crossing, and I didn't realize there was one key part where I was moving the boss too far for people to really easily do the double ring cross or the single ring cross.
Yeah.
So we adjusted that. We also adjusted how we bait. There's like starting in phase two, every set of rings has an obliteration arc happening during it pretty much. Mm-hmm. So we adjusted how we're baiting those to try and make it easier to dodge. And like we spent an hour and something on it last week.
Jesus. Yeah.
And then two pulls on it this week. And that sounds great, except that our second pull, we killed it with a warlock in a seed and a enhancement shaman. And that's it.
Nice. Nice. So
we just like we got there, but we lost like three people on the first set of rings in phase two, another four people on the first set of rings in phase three. And it is in that sense actually very much like Zymox from Castle Nathria, where like if you get through the final shield, it's not technically the final shield, but the third shield, with like half your raid alive, you'll kill it. Because you really only like we got there with like 14% health on the boss. So you do the 3% of your health and shield damage. And then the 10%, you know, just melts away. The problem is that immediately after we lost like seven of those people, so we had three people doing like 3% of the boss's health.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so it was a race to get before that next shield. I actually think we got the fourth shield for us.
Okay.
So yeah, so we actually had to go through all four shields, which wasn't too bad, but not what we wanted to do, that's for sure. So
yeah, I mean there's a point where it's not like it's not net positive DPS, but it is like if you just focus on doing the mechanics, by skipping the fourth shield, you're actually having to do 10% more of the boss's health, basically, or 7% more of the boss's health.
Yeah.
So there's actually a pretty good incentive to just like do the mechanics. Then you get this extra free 7% knocked off of the boss's health.
Yeah, that's true. I guess so. Okay, so you got the Sogne down in epic fashion, and then how was you? Do you guys have Zymox down now?
Yeah, we do. last week we almost had it down. We did a little bit of like, oh man, it's after raid ends, but we just had a 3% wipe. We can't stop, you know. Yeah. So we did another one and we wiped it 3% again.
Oh, that's
It was so brutal. And actually, so last week, I think I had, on a personal level, had the worst week that I have played in Raid in a very long time, which contributed to us not getting the Zymox skill, because there were a few wipes in there that were my fault. There were a couple wipes in there to people not baiting traps. There were a couple wipes in there to be just not adjusting for traps being baited in bad spots. But we came in this week and we were all like ready to go. We played super well, and then we got the wrong rings for the portals we had put out because we pushed too fast. Our damage went up by enough that we ran in, started running into this overlap where instead of doing the second set of phase three rings, he skips it and goes straight to phase four rings. But we still have the phase three portals set up, which is extremely difficult to do. It's possible. It's difficult. Yeah. Except that the portals then despawn after the fourth ring spawns.
Oh, so you can't. Wow.
Like the way that I'm pretty sure I see like they thought this through and then implemented it wrong. They're like, we don't want portals to despawn while there are rings out. We're going to wait until all the rings are done and then we're going to despawn the portals. And then they went and implemented it as we're going to wait until all of the rings have spawned.
Yeah.
And then we'll give you a new set of portals, which just means that if you get that overlap, you literally can't do it. There's not a tank mechanic going on that could yoink people through the walls. There's no portals out. You know, the only way you could do it is if everybody's Night Fae Venthyring can cross not one, but two rings in a row, which is not really practical.
So
we ended up actually hard committing to beating it by pressing Bloodlust at the start of phase three.
Okay.
And just pushing it in time to get the new set of portals before that set of rings. Which kind of sucks. Like, they did such a good job on Zymox in general, making it so that these push timer overlaps don't happen. And then this one overlap really messes you up. So we lost like probably 45 minutes to that.
Like messing around there. God.
But once we got through that, we absolutely destroyed the boss. It was great.
Nice.
It was great. But the other thing we did this week, so we have zero pulls on Prototype Pantheon right now. We killed Dossain at like the last pull of our Friday raid night. Mm-hmm. But we did splits on Friday.
Oh, really?
Really? I didn't have four piece. Our raid leader didn't have four piece. We had two boomkins without four pieces. Mm-hmm. And the ability to funnel all of them.
Oh, nice.
So okay. We were like, well, like we can either effectively like bet that we'll get enough of them just by pure luck.
Yeah.
Or we can just like kind of wait for them to get it from Creation Catalyst. Or we can spend an extra hour of our raid night setting up to funnel them these tier pieces.
Yeah.
I ended up just like YOLOing into my tier piece while we were setting up for that. So that was nice. One of our boomkins ended up being out of the country. Friday night. So he didn't get funneled, but then we funneled our raid leader, his four piece, and then another boomkin, their four piece.
Nice.
And the guy that was out of the country, he's just going to have to like, I don't know, get lucky.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're not going into heroic again. That was like,
We had decided
we were going to basically continue doing heroic until people were done with their four pieces, more or less. And doing splits basically meant, well, if we do this week, we spend a little bit more time this week, but then we don't do it at all next week.
Yeah.
Or after. So we don't have to worry about it anymore. And so that's what we did. It was a testament to the tuning mistake that is how powerful tier sets are, in my opinion. Like,
oh yeah,
we wouldn't have bothered if tier sets were not as powerful as they are, but they are so powerful.
I think we only have three. We have three people left of our sheets, right? That don't have four piece: Hunter, Enhancement Shaman, and a Shadow Priest.
We have a second person because of the legendary thing. That doesn't have their tier four piece, and like they have four pieces, but they can't wear it and wear their legendary. And wearing their second legendary is better than wearing four piece. They're a wrestler shaman, so yeah.
That's rough. Yeah, I don't know if we're going into heroic. I hope we're done. If anything, we just kill like the heroic tier bosses and go from there. Because I think most everybody has heroic tier at least. So
We're done with heroic. We're going into Prototype Pantheon tonight, and we have a whole raid night to spend on it, and I am hopeful that we do get the kill. It's going to be...
That's awesome.
Like, it could go either way, but it's not actually a very complicated fight, and it's... A lot of it is on the healers, right? Like, the healers do the seeds well and keep people alive through the winds, and the DPS just, like, don't get knocked off the platform by the animals and kill the necromancers, and it kind of should die. And I'm pretty confident in our healers. We've got some good healers.
That's awesome.
But that's awesome. It could definitely die tonight, or it could like be another like back to back 3% wipes, get it next week thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We We had every, like, we had a, I think we have a, we tried five healing it actually, which I don't know if mm-hmm. is the way we'll actually kill it. We might
actually. That's actually how we're planning on going in tonight.
Five, yeah.
Did you run into any issues with that? What, or is it just like damage?
No, I mean, the five healing felt comfortable, but almost too comfortable. So, like,
okay.
That was the, like, we never really saw the full ramp of damage, particularly in P2. So, like, yeah. That's the one thing that I think we, like, right now going through P1, four healers is plenty. And then going into P2, at least for the first probably half of that phase, four healers is fine. But we, that's yeah. where we sort of break apart. After the first hand, it sort of gets a little sketchy.
Yeah, you gotta have people miss, avoid, like, the lines.
Yeah, yeah, the circles and stuff like that, and soak lines. And so, but no, I think we're gonna actually try four healing it, because I think the extra DPS is probably, at least in our raid, a little bit better. So,
okay,
we'll see how it goes, though. So it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, cool. Well, I guess that's progress review, and I guess we can sort of pivot now yeah. to like the last week. So I want to start with actually the leaks and some of that.
Yeah,
I think that'll be like the fun part to start with it. So yeah, so if you guys aren't aware, Blizzard made a couple of updates to a couple of, I will say, like, JavaScript files on their website, and one of those updates actually points to having to or indicates the next WoW expansion will be named Dragonflight, right?
Yeah.
And basically, like, the code itself is checking to see if you have, if one of the three Dragonflight editions are like in the store, is the way the code works. And the three editions are typical. They're like standard, the middle tier, like heroic edition, and then like the epic edition, which is like the, like, all the extra stuff, right? So that leaked. But independently, and actually before this came out, there was a screenshot posted too of what they're saying is like the box art, or like the cinematic yeah. art for Dragonflight, yeah. which shows Alexstrasza, you know, in a new form, and it's like of someone's desk with like it printed out posted on their wall. So
yeah,
the classic
printing vendor leaks, like Magic the Gathering or exactly. Pokemon players will be familiar with this. There's also another one. There's a they registered SSL certificates. For yep. dragonflight.blizzard.com. And I've never tried doing this before, because why would you? But I don't know if you can register a SSL cert for a domain, like a subdomain of a domain that you don't own. Like, I have emelson.net. Yeah. Could you register an SSL certificate for anomaly.emelson.net? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think you can, because I think there's a, at least if I, like, whenever you do like the Let's Encrypt stuff, which is like a free mm-hmm. like service to do SSL certs, there's like a challenge portion of creating the certificate where you right, need to have specific things on the
site.
Yeah. Yeah, like on the web server, like expecting a specific response. Because yeah. I think if you went to that dragonblight.blizzard.com, it would probably 404 or wouldn't redirect anywhere if you hadn't set right. it up previously. So
right.
So yeah. So the certs for the other one. So yeah. So it looks, I mean, everything points to Dragonblight being the expansion name. Now, the interesting thing is that it's in the code on their website. So it could be an elaborate, like, misdirection that they're doing.
That's the other thing. April 1st was Friday.
Yeah.
This happened yeah. Friday. That's the only thing that gives me pause.
Exactly.
That's the only thing. Which, I mean, I guess if the Blizzard team... if the WoW team are putting on an elaborate April Fool's gag, like, they got us.
Yeah.
They got us good.
Real good. Real good. Yeah. Because, I mean, everybody's reporting that this is sort of the next expansion or the new expansion name, which is just...
Yeah.
Which is funny because, I mean, if it is a huge, like, just misdirect, it's good on them. They got the community yeah. for sure. So, but I don't know. So, I mean... I don't want to spend too much time speculating because there's a lot of stuff can happen and we don't really know the final outcome of most of this, but I will tell you that I'm extremely excited about this.
Yeah.
Primarily
The Dragon Isles expansion concept has been like a fan expansion concept literally since the Wrath of the Lich King era. That was like, you know, you would see MMO champion leaks, quote unquote, yeah. of the Dragon Isles expansion before Cataclysm came out and things like that. And then when stuff like Nefarian being a on the box art for Cataclysm was part of it. That was a big deal because, oh my gosh, Dragon Isles. No.
Dragon
Isles. Yeah.
Yeah. But, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, so, and yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan. Like, I started playing WoW when dragons were the bad guys, right? Like Nefarian and whatever, like, what was the other one? Like, there was always like Ebonrock and Flamegore and Black.
And Anixia and.
Yeah, Anixia, yeah. Yeah, all those guys were, all those, you know, dragons were sort of the thing. That's still the, like, it's hilarious to this day. Like, personally, like, whenever I tell my wife I'm going to play games, she's like, are you killing dragons tonight? And I was like, yeah, like, because that's the only thing that she remembers is like when I used to play, or when I still play, but when we played, when we first met, it was always like, I gotta go kill some dragons, was always like my response to that. So
yeah,
I'm excited to get back there. We'll see like everything they talked. Like, the funny thing too is there's a leak also, and I didn't want to really get too much into it, but there's a leak also from MMO Champion, like when we were going through leak season at like the end of February, one of them actually is named Dragonblight. And like it has like some crazy stuff inside of it about like what's upcoming.
I don't think that one.
I don't think it's real.
That one is too far afield. And if you want to name your Dragon Isles expansion, you know, there's only a few like really stellar names. Like Dragonflight is a good name for a dragon expansion.
Oh, yeah.
So I wouldn't put too much on that. They didn't have any other. We don't have any other details for the expansion. All we've got is the name, some box art, Alexstrasza's involved. That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah.
We're going on this being real right now. But
Which we don't have to wait too long. Like, what is it? April 16th is 19th. Or 19th, 19th, sorry, yeah.
So that April is 19th. Let me pull up the
like 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks calendar. Away, right?
That is Tuesday. So we have this coming Tuesday. 2 weeks from then. So we're going to have this coming Tuesday, the week after that, Creation Catalyst comes out, the week after that, expansion announcement. Exciting times.
It'll be good. It'll be good. I'll get to start getting tier sets on my alts that I'll never play, but it'll be fun.
I started doing like a weekly key on my DK just to start progressing the ye old tier set.
Nice.
I've been clearing the raid on my paladin.
Oh, nice.
On at least normal, like normal, a little bit of heroic. I have 2-piece, both from my vault. 0-piece is dropped for me from raid. Still 2-piece. Like, I feel like this is like that's the more casual raiders experience right now is like, oh yeah, I still just got 2-piece.
Exactly.
Or maybe
exactly.
I've got a 3-piece, but I can't use it yet.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. So yeah, so yeah, new expansion, only a couple more weeks. We'll have to see if Dragonblight or Dragonflight, I'm sorry, I always say Dragonblight, but Dragonflight is the real name. And we'll see what they do. Is it really Dragon Isles? Is it just rehashed old zones? Do we finally get a Tinkerer class? Let's see.
We'll find out in a couple weeks. It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right, well then, moving on, a couple of quick hits here. So Legion, the Mage Tower, Legion Mage Tower, now permanently open. So that opened with reset. So you can go in to your heart's content, start gathering, you know, doing some of those runs. It's funny. I actually forgot about this until this weekend. And I was talking to somebody and I was like, what are you like? Just like, hey, what are you up to? You want to do a couple keys? They're like, oh, like, no, we're or like, I'm like grinding. He's like, I'm grinding Mage Tower. And I'm like, it's not Legion time walking, is it? He's like, no, it's open all the time now. I was like, Oh right. So Mage Tower open. Forgot about it, but you want to go in there and do it? Hey, it's fun.
There. I have not gone back in yet, but it's one of those things. It's pretty nice actually that it's just open because like I'm busy right now. I don't really want to take the time to go and try and knock out a couple more Mage Tower skins. But like I can go in a few weeks. And do it.
Oh yeah,
because I haven't finished. Like I would like to go back in and get it on my DK. I would like to go and get it on a couple other characters, and I don't have to worry about it. You know, I can go back in later.
Always there. It's always there, just waiting. Cool. And then so that's really the only thing that happened this week. I'd say on at least in terms of like updates to retail. They did. So Blizzard has posted a couple more things on 9.2.5. So basically the season four patch. So one thing, and actually we're going to take this in reverse order, but they put up a poll. I think we talked about this a little bit. They put up a poll for two, basically what they're adding to Mythic Plus, it sounds like, is two dungeons from each of the past three expansions, plus the Tazavesh dungeons from this expansion to the Mythic Plus pool. So you get the large ones. So you get Tazavesh split in two, Mechagon split in two from BFA, and then you'll get Karazhan split in two from Legion. And then from WoD, they basically put up a poll for what two dungeons you wanted to do. And that poll is now closed. If you didn't vote, we're sorry. However, Grimrill, Depot, and Iron Docks won, which is...
in both EU and NA.
Which is hilarious. Which is, it's funny that both regions voted for the same two.
Yeah. Disappointed that Ubers is not in there. Would have rather had Ubers than Grimrail Depot, to be honest.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Upper Blackhawk Spire. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I love Grimrail Depot, actually.
Okay.
Weirdly enough. That's what I voted for that. But yeah, so those will be at least the two dungeons that get added. There'll be Mythic Plus versions of those two dungeons, which will be interesting because, I'd say a lot of people do not enjoy Grimrail. There's a lot more vocal disdain for that dungeon than there is like praise of it. I like it primarily just because of the tech behind it. Like the way they actually built a dungeon that looks like you're on a moving train, I think is really cool. So it'll be interesting to see what season four Mythic Plus looks like. Is it just going to be these sort of eight dungeons now, or is there other ones? Like, is it all the current Shadowlands stuff?
Still a lot that we don't know about it. We do know. So they did one of the things with both Maw of Souls being a part of Legion Time Walking, and then Grimrail Depot winning the vote for WoD to be part of Season 4 Mythic Plus in Shadowlands. There was concern about accessibility because of motion sickness. So it wasn't as bad, I don't think, on Maw of Souls, but there was the moving background with like you're on a ship, and so people would get motion sick on that. Grimrail Depot is actually really bad about it for a lot of people because it looks like you're on a moving train, but you're not actually moving. And I know like my sister has just like awful motion sickness in that kind of scenario where it looks like you're moving, but you're not actually moving. So both of those, they actually came out and posted a video, which is pretty neat, they're adding a little vendor to each of them that you can just buy. It's like a copper, buy an item from them that turns off the moving background. I don't know if it's permanent or a toggle, or if you have to do it every time, or if you can like buy a bunch and just have them in your bags and pop one when you start the key, but no moving backgrounds. They are optional now. So that is, I think, actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and the buff is, or the way it works, it's only for you. So you're the only one.
Yeah.
Like the rest of your party can have the background moving, they'll see it moving. But you, if you do get sort of motion sickness from it, will not see it moving, which is awesome. So that's cool. That's it. That'll be in the 9.2.5 update. And then also they did post a couple of updates coming in. Some PvP changes, a new PvP arena is coming in. And then there'll be some new transmogs and mounts for Blood Elves and Dark Iron Dwarves. So all of that sort of coming into play here. So, PTR slowly gaining features and updates. No class changes yet, nothing like that. So, we'll see how Nine Nights are fleshed out.
We do have a couple of hot fixes for the live game from the past week.
That's true.
Or some of them are coming up, going to happen on Tuesday. Big rip in advance for the Guardian Druids in chat. There may be zero, but big sad for those people. Couple things. So Helandris got nerfs across actually all difficulties. They nerfed his health by 10% again, question mark, on Mythic. They nerfed Heroic, the ephemeral motes. There's fewer of them on Heroic in the final phase. They move slower in all phases. And then on Mythic, they changed the hot potato bombs so that they don't explode if you kick an orb with them or hit them with a tank beam. That was, you know, one of the things that caused these to, you know, like this to be such a wipe heavy boss, is that there were so many ways to accidentally detonate one of these bombs. Yep. And you just instantly die. The raid's dead when that happens. So removing a couple of ways for that to be accidentally detonated is just kind of nice. Like, you're right. Still going to kill someone if you hit them with a light shatter beam. But if they drop the bomb and they move out of the beam, you know, nobody's gotta, you know, go save Private Hot Potato.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they've also made a handful of other changes to a bunch of the other bosses coming in. So, like, they've reduced, they made a lot of heroic changes to Desogne, you know, health reductions, vulnerability reductions, things like that. One of the big ones for some of the later fights, Lords of Dread, now they're, when they were in Swarm of Darkness or Swarm of Decay, they used to take 100% additional damage from AoE attacks, which is why you saw, you know, Method and really like all the top guilds from a World First perspective stack, like Hunters and other melee for that. So they basically changed that to now just 100% of all damage taken. That way you don't need to stack sort of AoE heavy classes. You could always stack your basically your highest DPS classes.
This also helps paper over some things where, like, things you think are AoE abilities didn't count, because what they did is they applied a single target effect in AoE.
Yep.
So, like, for Brewmaster, Keck Smash counts. The initial damage on Breath of Fire counts, but the dot from Breath of Fire does not count. Because the dot is a single target. But even though you're applying it in AoE and the bulk of the damage comes from the dot, you know, you're not actually getting AoE damage bonus from it. And so this just, like, it makes it more consistent. It means that you're not going to see most guilds running, like, 5 Survival Hunters on this boss on Mythic, which is good, because most guilds can't. But, you know, that doesn't change the, like, you might still see people run a couple of Survival Hunters on this because they're just good at AoE.
Right. Right. So, yeah. So lots of fun updates there. They did... this week there was a couple of funny bugs. I don't know if you ran into this with your raid. There was one on Anduin with the phase 3, Mythic Anduin in this case, the phase 3, the shooting stars. Had a little bit of a difficulty tracking everywhere. So basically the bug was that they would shoot out and spin around in a circle. They'd go out maybe like 10, 15 yards from Anduin.
They would go like to the center of the platform and just spin. That was a neat clip.
So there was a couple of those. You might have saw that from Liquid. And then actually Vigilant Guardian had a huge issue, at least for us on Tuesday, with the orbs, where only a handful of folks in your raid could pick up the orbs from Vigilant Guardian and use them on the boss. Yeah. So we ran into that where we actually wiped, I think, once to that boss because one of the orbs no one ever picked up, no one realized. And then, we couldn't interact. Like, the person who typically does it had picked it up and dunked it, but then the orb slowly exited the boss and went back to its position. Like, he never dunked it. So we were like, I don't understand what's going on. It was a couple of those sort of things we found this week. They fixed, hopefully, all that. I don't know if you saw any of that on Friday. But for us, that was really it, I think, in terms of weird stuff. So no real major, I'd say. Like, I think the Lords of Dread is like the largest sort of change you'll see. Along with some of the Helandris nerfs. Those two bosses, I think, got hit the hardest this week. And actually, the one thing we didn't talk about, Pantheon. So, and you'll see this. So Pantheon, they changed the retreat percentage. So typically before the Pantheon, you fight two at a time, they would retreat at 50% health. And then you get the next two for phase two. And then those also would retreat at 50% health, and you'd fight both from 50% to zero, or all four from 50% to zero. They've changed that to now trigger at 40% health. Which basically makes phase one and two slightly harder, because now you'll have an additional
second change that goes with this that is important for context. All the bosses' health is reduced by 10%.
Oh yeah, sorry. Was that across all difficulties?
I don't know. I know it's at least Mythic.
Okay.
It's probably all difficulties.
Yeah.
But basically, the damage check in phase one, I Paoni did the math. I think it's 8% harder or something like that in phase one to beat the DPS check. Phase one and phase two to beat the DPS check to skip the second set of, you know, whatever you're trying to skip. Yeah. But then in phase three, the DPS check is like 26% easier.
Yeah.
So yeah. It makes phase three easier. Phase one and phase two are slightly harder. It kind of moves the difficulty around, but it does kind of put you in this situation where once you get to phase three, you know, you make it through the seeds, you make it through the winds, you make it through the night hunters, you're going to kill the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. I rescind my statement. There was a lot more changes this week, I'll say, than off the first look.
I don't see this on our notes, but well, maybe it's hidden in one of these hotfix ones, but another change to Lords of Dread. The pieces weak aura is broken now.
Oh, I didn't put that in the notes, but yeah, they pieces had the auto weak aura to like auto target or auto tell you who the imposters were, and yeah, that broke. Yeah, we ran into that on Tuesday. We chalked it up to either not everybody having it or it actually breaking, so we just did it normally. But yeah.
Yeah.
They officially broke that. So everybody who donated to charity to get it got ripped off.
I mean, they still did a good thing, but I don't think anybody's surprised to see that fixed. It completely removed one of the like big new mechanics from the boss.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still like you still basically need a weak aura to do it with any substantial raid size. Like the timer is just short enough that you just need a weak aura to do it. So we use the voting one. Like there's a macro you get and you target the person, you hit your macro and it. Or there's technically a button that it pops up too, but the button doesn't work for me. So, and again, I never get picked to do it because I'm a tank. And I guess tanks aren't allowed to have fun. Nope. I don't know why that one doesn't target tanks, but it doesn't.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So that is now broken. Yeah, it makes that fight. I'd say that phase isn't too bad. By the time you get to Mythic, you can probably do it on Mythic without any macro, just sort of calling names and typically it should be okay. So
yeah, it's when you start getting closer to 30 people and you have 30 people trying to call who they're on. It is like, okay, guys, like one person at a time, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you get the one person in your raid who just says the same names over and over again. You're like, yeah, by the third time we heard you. Like we understand who you think is the imposter.
Yes.
Cool. And then I guess final hot fix thing sort of topic here. They posted the April 5th. So what's going to come up with this reset coming up on Tuesday? It's really a tier set sort of set of hot fixes. So pretty much other than the Guardian Druid, which got nerfed slightly more. the rest of the classes, it's all DPS classes really. And so you'll see like Fire Mage buffs, Windwalker buffs from a monk perspective. Paladin or buffs, I think too. So sort of damage ups really across the board for everybody. So trying to bring some of those lower represented classes up, which is cool.
So the Windwalker buffs, obviously most relevant to us being a technically monk podcast. This, from what Babs was telling me, is about a 4% single target DPS gain. So this is Rising Sun Kick, Blackout Kick, Tiger Palm, and Fist of the White Tiger damage increased by 10%. None of these, of course, are AoE abilities, so it's all just pure single target damage increase. I don't know if 4% is enough to really make them compelling in single target, but it certainly makes them better.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, Guardian Druids. The single target damage that you get from this tier set for Guardian Druids is not that great. They're like pretty solid, like upper middle of the pack right now with their four piece. They're going to be now lower middle of the pack with their four piece on single target. Their four piece died for the sins of Mythic Plus, like being able to do, and it's not even like high keys Mythic Plus things. Like, I mean, technically it was also high keys, but relatively high keys Mythic Plus things.
Yeah.
Like you pressed Incarn with Ursoc's Fury Remembered or whatever it is. And just did like 150k damage. It's honestly, it died for the sins of those clips of people doing that more so than an actual like problem. Yeah. Because you had to have Incarn up, or Incarn's a 3-minute CD. Or actually, I take that back. It died for the sins of the fairies.
It's true.
Having the cooldown reduction from Ur and from a holy priest meant that you could incarn like every or every other pole.
It's pretty good.
That's why they nerfed this. Which sucks because most people that are playing Guardian don't have a pocket holy priest to feed them fairies. And
yeah,
that like there's a number of things like that where like they nerfed demonology warlocks, but demonology warlocks in many ways are doing as well as they are because of how powerful they are with external buffs.
Yeah, with like PI being the main one. Yeah.
Yeah. Where like they're obviously still very good without external buffs, but they are substantially better because of how the class works with external buffs. And so like just stuff getting nerfed that affects people that don't have external buffs because they are so much better with external buffs kind of feels bad.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. So, I mean, well, I guess, you know, if your class got buffed, congratulations. If not, you know, sorry, you're probably already good. But no, the monk buffs will be good. A little bit.
No brewmaster's tier set fix yet.
Still none.
I saw the hotfix like updates. I was like, oh, monk is on there. Let's see. No.
Yeah, I don't think we lost our brewmaster this week to any tier set shenanigans, but
I got my four piece done, and the first thing I did is make a weak aura that tells me when the buff is about to expire, so I know I have to push Kick Smash right now.
Yeah. You're dead, basically. Yeah. He was
almost died to it multiple times on Zymox this week. It was not pleasant.
That muscle memory. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, before we talk about the Morgan Day interview, I did want to spend a little bit of time just to wrap up the race for World first, because last podcast, we literally did our podcast on Saturday before the race ended. And I think, Echo had killed the boss.
Killed it. And then I uploaded the podcast too. It's like, I have a note in the podcast on the site where like, this is perhaps the worst timing for us recording this podcast we have ever had, because we recorded the podcast. We're like, it looks like Echo's probably going to get it, but I don't know, man. Maybe that phase four is like harder than we think. And they got it. And then we uploaded the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, congratulations to Echo on the kill. I mean, to be fair, they are, and we'll talk about, I guess we can jump right into it, but, they killed it days before the next killed. Which is crazy because they were just on another level, I think, going through Jailer. I actually watched the kill itself, and the pulls even before the kill were just like low percentage wipes. Like, literally was like,
they played out of their minds. It was great.
No, they played really well. So hats off to them. I think from there, we actually, a couple things happened. So one thing, which was interesting was like Liquid essentially flew home and took, so this was on a Saturday, and they basically took all of Saturday and Sunday off, and Liquid didn't raid again until Monday, at all.
They actually didn't raid again until Monday evening because of internet issues.
Yeah. So, which was, I think, the right call for them. I don't think we're going to talk about it here, but Max gave like a big recap of like a Q&A from the race and everything like that. But from a Liquid perspective, like their viewpoint, and this is what Max says, like, it's either you're first or it's nothing, right? Like, they're not playing for second place. Like, if they don't get first, it doesn't matter what place they get the rest of the way, right? Like, top five, top 10 for them. It's just, you know, they basically do everything to get first. So he was like, when we knew Liquid or we knew Echo was close, they're like, we just made the decision. We're just going to fly home. We're not going to change our flights for the fourth time. The team is like mentally just burned out like to a crisp. And you could tell like their Thursday and Friday pulls were just atrocious.
They went a solid 100 pulls without getting a new best.
And
it can be slightly misleading to say that in some cases, because like sometimes you make progress without actually getting the boss's health lower. You know, you figure out a new way to deal with the mechanic that's better and easier, and it sets you up for success later. And that doesn't always translate into an immediate like reduction in the boss HP.
Right.
In this case, I do think it was accurate to say that they went 100 pulls without the new best. They just like got stuck. They hit a brick wall mentally, I think.
Yeah.
And there are some people that had an unbelievably shit take that like Liquid shouldn't have done this. They should have like powered through it and everything. Like, no.
I feel like people don't realize that like this number one is the longest race ever, right? Like the longest race, I think, in years that before the first kill. So it went 3 full weeks, right? But then also Liquid got to their venue a week before, right? Which in any other race is a great thing, right? Because like typically yeah. they said like they get to the venue like a day or two before, they do like one day of media, and then like then they get ready to raid. So there's not a ton of time to do everything. But like this time they got there a week early, got acclimated. But at that point they'd been away from home for a month, basically. Like and doing this like 16 hours a day. Like I think Max made the point of like if this was a typical race that ended like over the weekend of the second reset, right? Like went like 10, 12 yeah. days, they're like, we probably would have stayed, finished it out, and flew home reset day, like you know, the Tuesday coming up. But he's like, we're not rescheduling, like nobody wanted to reschedule their flights for like the fourth time.
Right. And I don't blame them. Like I haven't watched Max posted a Q&A video on YouTube. I haven't gone and watched it yet. It's probably like a stream recap kind of video. I haven't seen that yet, but like I saw his initial like announcement of it. And you could just tell like they were tired. They were burnt out, and like they made the right call.
Yeah,
absolutely made the right call.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Just for their group and for their team. Like there's no point in staying at that point. You're not making progress. Like nobody's happy. And like, I think keeping everybody there just probably breaks the team aspect even more. Right. Then.
Yeah. Speaking from personal experience, you cannot actually just push through burnout. Burned out, the absolute worst thing you can do is keep going. Like there's literally nothing worse than doing that. You got to stop and take a break. And they have to think not just about this race. They have to think about, well, there's this season 4 announcement that happened. Are we going to have another race this expansion? Exactly. Is that going to be a real thing or is it going to be not a real thing? And then, of course, they have to think about 10.0, where there will be a real race, and they want to not have their raiders burn out and quit the game because they've got some very good players. Like replacing those people is very hard.
Oh yeah. You know?
So.
Oh yeah, 100%. So, yeah. So I mean, hats off to Echo for doing that. The rest of the top five, just so we'll quickly go through it. So you had Echo at 1. You had Method number 2, a surprise Method. Which, to be fair, it will be interesting to see going to the next expansion if Method continues there. Because, like, I'm not the biggest fan. Like, if you guys look at my Twitter feed from, like, 2 years ago when Method broke down, I'm not the biggest fan of Method. I will commend Scott or Sko for, like, keeping it together and rebuilding with, like, new organization, new people, new group. Hopefully not the same sort of mentality there, but same sort of type of people. But, I mean, hats off to them for finishing second. I mean, you got to, like, Scott's a... He's a warrior, I guess, both literally and figuratively for basically rebuilding for the entire, like, this is the second Method rebuild, right? You know, they broke apart when Serenity left. He doesn't give up,
yeah.
No, loves this game, so hats off to him. Third was Skyline, which I believe is a Chinese guild.
That is a Chinese team, yes.
Yep, which is surprising for them. That's, I think, their highest ranking ever and good for the region. And then SK Pieces, of course, Pieces Boys. Yeah. And Girls got 4th, and then Liquid 5th. I think at those are the top five. I think the couple other guilds have killed it since then, but
I think Aster killed it. Aster, I know, killed it because that's another Chinese team. It's a team that Warcraft Log side here. We are, of course, also helping teams when they have issues with their logs. You know, their log uploader breaks or something. Aster had so many issues. I don't know.
Oh, really?
I don't know what's going on their side. Like, we didn't have that kind of issues with any other team, but like they got the kill, but we weren't showing it as them having killed it because they didn't upload a log. Like, we pulled and there's no Chinese armory for us to pull from, so there's just like no way for us to know. But they posted on Twitter that they had killed it, and like 6 hours later, Warcraft Logs wasn't showing it because they hadn't actually uploaded the kill. It was a mess.
Oh man, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, at least for now, race over. Well, race over for, you know, and then maybe not over for everybody, but the top teams are sort of are done. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see if we get like, I mean, Method being good, two guilds in the EU with that sort of pull will be interesting, right? Because like Method's got sort of that very old school, been around forever type WoW, like that name in World of Warcraft, right? And then you have Echo, just the top team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of months going into 10.0.
I do think that like if Liquid hadn't just hardcore burned out, they obviously would have gotten second. They were far ahead of Method for a lot of their progression. Yeah. And they just hit that brick wall and stopped progressing. And, you know, Method overtook them while they were, you know, doing their flight home and resting. But Method was still 2-3 days behind Echo's kill. 2 days behind Echo's kill. That's a large gap. That's the largest gap between first and second kill in a while. Like, the only one that's maybe been... No, because, like, there was the Jaina kill where, like, Method killed it on a Monday, and then the next day Limit came in and did their reclear and killed it. And that's how it was, again, in Sanctum, and then in Castle Nathria they both killed it the same week. So this is the largest gap between first and second kill, like, you know, only 2 days, but 2 days is a long time.
It's a huge amount of progress. Yeah, huge amount of time to progress. So I think you can't commend Echo enough for the push. And I think they really, I mean, to be fair, they sort of started to turn it around, I think, with Rigelon and Lords of Dread, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, that's where they sort of set themselves up to be, like, catch up, be neck and neck with Liquid and push together into Jailer. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Man, now I have nothing to watch on Twitch. Race is over.
I guess you'll just have to watch the podcast, huh?
It's true. Yeah. It's the only other thing I have in the background is as we're doing stuff. So,
there was a Morgan Day interview as well, which I actually, like, heard it talked about before I actually found out where it was.
Oh, nice.
So I just actually found where it was this morning. There is now a post on WoW Hut up with some of the highlights, which, you know, great segue here. Some of which are about the length of the race.
Yep.
And the impact that had on people, and stuff like splits, you know. And they actually admitted that the change to the trading rules for tier pieces was intended to try to make those splits less attractive for the world first race.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the first time that they've ever really admitted to that. Like, it wasn't for regular raiders trying to make sure, you know, little Timmy doesn't have to trade away his 4-piece bonus to the raid leader or whatever. It was for the world first race. And of course they did the splits anyway. They did even more splits. And not only that, but like the way that they split up the tier, actually, they felt, you know, maybe contributed to the splits because you actually couldn't get 4-piece the first week. Like, the guilds couldn't finish their splits during Heroic Week or get most of the way through their splits on Heroic Week. They had to actually wait and do a ton of them during Mythic Week, which contributed to, you know, that's just an extra 2 days that they basically didn't progress Mythic, which was both a bad viewing experience, a bad experience for the raiders themselves, just like, you know, not a great experience for anybody at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And Morgan mentions that he's like, we came in like on Tuesday morning, like all ready to like turn on the streams and be like, cool, like how far are they going to get in Mythic? And he's like, we just watched splits for 12 hours. He's like, we were not expecting that at all. I don't think anybody was. But he's like, in hindsight, like we realized that, like, I think this is one thing you mentioned, that like the loot rules themselves were specifically targeted at the world first race and splits. But I think Morgan also, maybe him and the team are like, we're never going to stop them from doing degenerate things. I don't think he comes out and says that exactly in the interview, but it's sort of, you get the feeling.
It's very heavily implied. Yeah.
Like he's like, there's really nothing we can do. They're always figure out a way to like funnel loot. And he's like, nowadays, he's like, it's interesting. He does have one interesting point. He's like, nowadays, or back before really the streaming and things like that, splits were all about how many characters you could have, right? They still are, but the idea would be is like one player would have to have 7, 8, 9 characters, right? And now nowadays, with nowadays with the helpers, like they just need a larger community. So like, while there's probably less of a burden on individual world first players from maintaining multiple characters, there's still a huge like reliance on like the community to like do this. And like the splits become an almost more degenerate than they would be. Yeah. Right. That was an interesting part of the interview where they talked about that, that sort of trading restrictions and loot rules. And I think, and I'll sort of, cause I watched the Max, I know you didn't, but we'll pull in some stuff from Max as we talk about this. But Max's point too is like, Max basically said, I'm done talking about loot. He's like, Blizzard is not going to change it. It's been two expansions. He's like, you literally just live with the systems you give us, right? Like, we're not going to, like, we've set our piece from like a world first perspective. People have made, you know, posts and feedback on it all over the board. Blizzard's pretty set in their way. So we sort of just play what we're given with, right, at this point. So,
I mean, at the same time, they took feedback from how domination sets worked for this tier. We actually saw two things that they did for it, for this tier, that I think are based directly on how domination sets went and the feedback from domination sets. So the first thing is guaranteed tier piece drops. You're guaranteed to get two tier pieces from every tier boss, just, you know, with 20 people, guaranteed two tier pieces, which goes a long way towards limiting the variance of like, oh, you kill, you know, Remnant and nobody gets a tier helm.
Right, right.
That sucks. Or, you know, the other thing that they did is that they added Creation Catalyst, which is obviously not out yet. And I think the timing on that was a mistake. Personally, I think the timing on that was just a mistake. When my guild that is World 500 has decided that it makes sense for us to spend an hour of our raid night doing splits to get people their four pieces rather than wait an additional 2 weeks for those people to get their four pieces, that means that they messed up the tuning on when that comes out. If Creation Catalyst had come out this week, we wouldn't have even considered it. Like, we would just finish our four pieces and move on with our lives. Right. But it is there. And what that does is it cuts off this long tail of the distribution that he refers to in the interview of people that just didn't get their pieces. And we had raiders that were, you know, a couple months into Sanctum that didn't have their stuff yet. Maybe a couple months is extreme. Yeah. You know what I mean? That didn't have it and were like, I don't even know why, like, how should I just quit the game? Like, I can't compete. And there's a third piece of this that he alludes to a little bit, but I do think is an important piece of it, of these things are still too powerful. Like,
yeah.
The bonuses are too powerful, and when it's a 30% DPS gain to get your four piece, you know, not having it is just feeling like you're not playing the game.
Yeah, and that's when splits become a thing, right? When the power is that great. But then it's such a, and I get, yeah, he kind of says this, but there's also such a like a fine line to draw there, because you don't want them to turn into like what individual gems were, which were essentially useless, right? Like,
yeah,
from a Sanctum Domination perspective. But yeah, and you don't want to overtune it where like you have to have it to compete. So I think there's like that fine line of like, hey, this feels good to equip four piece, but I'm not overshadowing everybody else versus, hey, it doesn't matter if I have four piece or not. It's just like, great, I get an extra couple item level. Yeah. I do an extra couple of random damage. You know what I mean?
I do think that this tier was better than domination sets because of the two-piece. Like, two-piece bonuses for a lot of classes are actually pretty good. There's some where the two-piece is actually better than the four-piece. Uh-huh. Like, we have, like, Demon Hunter. Havoc Demon Hunter is like that. We had someone that they couldn't equip four-piece with double legendary yet because of the tier pieces that they got with every legendary. Like, there's a one legendary that they run on, like, one fight that they actually just took. They took off four piece. They wore their two piece and their legendary for that fight, and it was fine.
Yeah.
Like, having the two pieces be good on their own makes it feel way less bad when you don't get a four piece. But then when the four piece is such a high power gain, you reintroduce that bad feeling. Like, the new baseline is having two piece.
Right. So yeah, exactly. So No, it was yeah, I mean those two loot rules I think were good. I just think that, sorry, my comment was more about I think we'll always we'll always have personal loot at least, but it sounds like they're making some changes to make some of that slightly better, right?
Yeah, and I mean I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent with this, but as long as personal loot is in the game and not like significantly neutered as compared to if they've reintroduced master loot, the world first race will use personal loot. Yeah. Because you can manipulate it. They've developed ways to manipulate personal loot that are well beyond what you can accomplish with master loot.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. I don't know. Was there any other questions you've gotten to? Because I have a couple of sections I wanted to sort of touch on.
Let's go with you, because I've only, that's about as far as in the interview that I got, which I guess for anybody that is curious, the interview is up on the Realm Maintenance podcast. This is like Warcraft Radio, Realm Maintenance, like that podcast. There's a YouTube video that's linked from Wowhead. I will also have it in the show notes for this episode. So if you're listening to this on like iTunes, you can click it there. Or if you're on YouTube, you can just go look at that. Definitely would recommend listening through it rather than just reading the highlights from Wowhead. Like the highlights are good and they're important, but there's a lot of extra detail in Morgan Day's actual answer. Side note, I just realized it's kind of weird that I always say Morgan Day.
His full name.
Yeah. I'm not on a first name basis with him, obviously. I've never spoken to him before. So calling him Morgan would be weird. But then I don't calling him Day, you know.
Mr. Day, yeah.
Yeah, that would also be weird. But also his name is short, so I can just do Morgan Day every time.
Morgan Day.
Tangent over, but.
Well, I guess, and one thing as we talk about his name, I don't know if you noticed, but Morgan is now an associate game director.
Got promoted. I did see that.
Which is awesome. So if you guys don't know, Morgan was actually, he was lead encounter designer. So he comes from the encounter design team.
Same as Ian, but he also has been very good at actually communicating with the community, I think, in a way that Ian has at times struggled with.
I think the number one thing is like Morgan, it seems like a very likable dude. I've never met Morgan in person, but Morgan just seems like a very nice person, like just a good dude to hang out with. Ian, a little bit more robotic, maybe.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to say.
Ian is less of a public speaker. Like there's nothing wrong with that, but I feel like Ian is less of a public speaker.
Yeah. Well, cool. So some of the other highlights that I wanted to hit on was one was the, and we actually didn't talk about this on Method's kill, but they ask about the bug that Method used to kill Jailer Second. So if you guys aren't aware, there was a specific, I believe it's a mage ability
that could be used. Your mage ability, Mirrors of Torment. Actually, Kojiyama, one of the rogue theory crafters, is in my guild, and he was talking with me about the implementation of that ability.
Yeah.
And how they missed a spell flag that they normally would use to flag silences. That is probably the root cause of the issue. Where usually, you know, if you have an ability that causes a silence in addition to its normal effect, like Avenger's Shield, it does an interrupt and a silence. The silence is a separate debuff. The silence is tagged on the debuff itself, as well as being an effect of having the debuff on you. Like there's two separate flags. Mirrors of Torment's final mirror break is missing one of those flags, but it has the other one. And the speculation is that caused it to not be like the boss to not be immune because of the way that they implement the boss immunity was like looking for one flag and not the other.
Gotcha.
And we actually do have confirmation that this does affect other bosses. You can cancel the Zymox intermission channel with this, which is bad. Don't do that because it means you have to do the main phase with all of the adds up, and that's way harder.
Interesting.
But you can cancel boss abilities with this because of that. And that is what ended up happening on the Method kill. Once they figured it out, like they told other people about it. I don't know what channels they used to do that, but every kill since Methods has used that bug.
Yeah. Yeah, basically the bug is you can use the Mirrors of Torment from mages to interrupt the jailer's healing in phase four so that he does not heal to 24% or so. Basically, right. The jailer, you get him to 10%, interrupt it, and he stays at 10%, and then you kill the jailer. So they brought that up. They asked the question here, and I think they basically said, like, Morgan's response was sort of twofold. For this one, it was basically they couldn't track down the bug. They didn't actually know exactly.
They thought it was an RP timing thing where, like, it canceled it because the boss started walking. Yeah. And that's what you're looking for, you may not even be testing with a mage ability, right?
Right.
Exactly. And so there's no way they could reproduce the bug like that because that's not actually what was causing it.
Yeah. So that was the issue. Although Morgan did confirm that, like, Mortal Strike and other healing reduction abilities were supposed to work. Like, they sort of, as encounter designers, we sort of want to keep that flavor or those sort of utility spells in encounters where it makes sense, right? The idea of, like, your raid having some sort of Mortal Strike in it at 20 people on Mythic, probably fair to say you're not going to miss out, right?
Yeah, so there's two 50% Mortal Strike debuffs, I believe. One of them is on a Hunter pet. So if you have a hunter that's not marksmanship, or even if they are marksmanship, like, it's a massive, like, if you attributed all of the healing prevented to the player that prevented it,
right?
Like, it would be massively better for your marksmanship hunter to pull out a raptor or whatever pet does the mortal strike effect. And then, of course, arms warrior. There are other effects like the Felguard for Demonology Warlocks has a 20% Mortal Strike debuff, and there's a few others between 20 and 50%. But of course, with a heal that size, the 50% one is the one you want.
Exactly. So that was an interesting little take on sort of their sort of view of, like, what happened. And he basically mentions too, they're probably going to hotfix it at some point, probably with a weekly reset, but they'll be making changes to that moving forward. So
I don't know if there's anybody else at that point in progression on that fight right now. Actually, we could pull that up and find out.
No idea.
Let's go see. Let's see. Sepulcher, progress. Like, there's 6 kills total. Aster got the 6th. Oh, no, wait. Different Chinese kill, got the 6th. I don't even know anymore. But, like, BDGG is not at that point in progression where they would have triggered the bug yet.
Right.
So if they do, like, fix the bug and then do a compensatory, that's a hard word to say, nerf to the boss, you know. And he talked a little bit about the intention of that final phase, which was very interesting to me. Because he basically said, like, the final phase was not intended to be, like, this really hard thing.
Right.
That, you know, was a wall in and of itself. It was supposed to be, like, you know, if you got there and you had your raid healthy and you had your defiles well and you, you know, were set up well when you entered phase four, you should be able to kill the boss. Which was an interesting bit of intention coming from him as an encounter designer. This kind of, I guess, in contrast to something, well, in some ways, like, the final platform of Sylvanas is like that, right? Where there's this big lull in the mechanics. You know, you get there, if you have everybody alive and you hit Bloodlust and you hit your potions and everybody's just blasting damage for, like, 25 seconds before the next mechanic happens.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and Denathrius, it is, like, a phase 3 of Denathrius is wild and super intense and everything. But then it has, at the end, this, like, 15-20 second period that is the same, where there's just a lull in the mechanics happening and people, you know, push their cooldowns and just go nuts on the damage.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting, yeah.
It might be a design philosophy for them, basically, where they take these sort of lull, like, getting to a point where you have a little bit of a lull, a little bit of a chance to breathe, because they definitely talked slightly about this in passing on the QA question, because there was a question around, like, what does QA look like internally for bosses? So, like, how do you QA bosses internally? They talked about, like, feel a little bit, like, timings, things like that. It seems like they don't actually test bosses as, like, a 20-person raid and going and do this, right? It seems more of, like, they're looking primarily for like larger bugs or larger just issues with the way the abilities are interacting, things like that. So,
I mean, the whispers in the community forever have been basically that they go in with like, you know, they have GM powers and they go in and they basically put the boss in a certain state where they can test an ability and just make sure that the ability works. You know, they're not going to be able to test every variation of every comp and every, you know, interaction. Right. Stuff like obviously the Mirrors of Torment thing with the jailer is an example of where they can't catch everything. There's no way. The timing on that is so specific. Like Echo never had it happen despite having a Venthyr mage, you know. It's pure luck that Method happened to have it happen, managed to, I don't know if they isolated it or just got lucky that they had it happen twice in a row because that's where their mage was using their cooldowns.
Right.
But then all, you know, the guilds after that were like, well, this is how the boss works now. You know, we're gonna do like this. So
Exactly. Well, cool. So I think the next sort of couple of sections, the highlight, they did ask a couple of questions around two things that are sort of somewhat related: the Great Vault, and how they felt that's turning out, and then also the economy and the fact that legendary prices were extremely high. So they're sort of hand in hand, and this is what, so Morgan's sort of comment on the Great Vault was like, they basically want it to be like your weekly like reward for whatever content you have. So he's like, the Great Vault in some form will probably continue on into the next expansion with a similar sort of like, hey, do this X thing, this X activity so many times, and then you'll get a reward at the end of the week. And so you will probably see the same raid, PvP, Mythic Plus sort of view of it. The one thing he did say, which I thought was interesting, was they always want you to be able to get something out of that, right? And so that's why they made the changes to sockets, to add more materials, where if you don't get an item from the vault, you still can get something else. So like his point, his like example is like, you may not get like the trinket you wanted this week, or really the only thing you need is a trinket, but you'll get enough currency to maybe buy a socket, not a socket to your gear. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, in that regard, probably see the Great Vault system. It seems like from a design perspective, that system stays around. And so hand in hand there, we talked about always wanting rewards. It's like we've, you know, previous to this season, I guess you could call it, or this sort of patch, you know, some of the times a Great Vault's worthless, right? You didn't need Stygia, you didn't need, you know, other stuff. You might not get any gear you got.
You had the option in 9.1 to get research, like Corthia research from the bad luck thing on the Great Vault, except it didn't count for reputation, so it didn't do the only thing you needed the research for.
Exactly. So that was sort of an interesting thing. So I'm assuming Great Vault stays around. I don't mind it, to be fair. I think it's fine.
Yeah. I think it's frustrating in some ways, significantly better than the old Mythic Plus box.
Right.
But as a raider, I would rather have the Mythic Plus box and have coins back.
That's fair.
It's like, just thinking of stuff like the weapons from last year. You want a Jathis or a Vein Ripper or Sylvanas daggers or the Hunter bow. You know, you can use a coin. And that is maybe on average, it is worse than the Great Vault. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
But it is the player saying, I want this thing. I am going to do this to try and get this specific thing, not to get a thing. I want this thing. Right. And the vault doesn't have anything like that. And the vault, like the loot pools are just so huge. You know,
it's true.
From your odds of seeing, like, there's what, 70 items that can come from a Mythic Plus vault or something like that.
Yes,
and so your odds of seeing, like, if you want a scale from Hakkar as a tank, you're basically never going to see it from your vault. I have not seen a single scale from the vault on any of my tanks that I consistently get 2 to 3 boxes a week, the whole expansion. Never seen one. And
that sucks.
Like that's where stuff like having a coin to say, you know, hey, I want an item from Hakkar. I want an item from Painsmith would feel a lot better.
Yeah.
So that's the one big gripes that I have with the Great Vault. But honestly, like, if they did something, like, there's a few different things they could do, right? Like, they could give us coins that, like, guarantee that we see loot from that boss on the vault. Like, if I could use a coin on Painsmith, and it's like, okay, an item from Painsmith will show up in your vault. That would feel better. It might still be the fucking ring every week, but it would feel better. Or something like, if you didn't, you know, take an item from your vault, if your bad luck thing was literally just a coin, then you could go into raid or into a dungeon and say, like, I'm gonna throw my coin on this boss, and it will give me an item from that boss instead of whatever was in my vault.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some sort of, I was thinking more on like the currency side, like something you could use the currency for to increase your luck.
They are so opposed to vendors. And the only things that I would want on the vendor are not the things that I feel like they would actually put on the vendor. Like, they could put all the non-special gear on the vendor and I would not care. It would be completely useless to me. Right. It would need to be a vendor with like the Vein Rippers and the Jathises and the Sylvanas weapons.
Yeah, which
they'll never put those on a vendor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, we could dream. But yeah, no, I think vault-wise seems like it'll be a system. We'll get the vault 2.0 or 3.0, whatever the number is at this point, for the next expansion for sure. Then the other thing they talked about a little bit was the economy situation around the fact that like legendaries were so, the base items of legendaries were so expensive. And his feedback is
fucking vindicated.
Yeah, his feedback is actually really interesting. And he basically says they missed the mark, particularly around... Like, so typically what'll end up happening is whenever there's a new patch, like the base stuff, like the idea is like it becomes cheaper for the old stuff and the new stuff becomes the main point of putting money into, right?
Except that didn't happen.
Exactly. And that's what he said. He's like, early on, they were like, cool, like we would want people to sort of make, like the idea was we want to keep mats fairly low for like the rank ones because you can try whatever you want and you're not that far behind. And he's like, what ended up happening is we never reduced the material costs for rank 2, 3, and 4 as the patches came in. So they remained just expensive and very difficult to gain and level up. So he's like,
and like wearing a 190 legendary in 9.0 did not feel as bad as wearing a 190 legendary when you're eye level 250.
Exactly. Exactly. So he's like, that was something that from like a system perspective, they missed the mark in terms of like giving catch-up mechanics, really catch-up, I guess the right way to say it, but giving a catch-up method to the legendary like base item crafting.
Which they actually did add one. We didn't talk about this, but they did add one this week. There's an item on the vendor at Honored in Xerath Mortis. You buy it, it is 4,800 gold, and it's an optional reagent for crafting a legendary. You craft a rank 1 legendary, and it promotes it to rank 5. So you can get a 249 legendary. You know, you don't have to level the legendary crafting. Mm-hmm. You get your mats, you get your vendor item, and then, you know, for probably like 8,000 gold total, you can have a 249 legendary.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I didn't realize. Sorry, I didn't even realize that came in. But
It snuck in on Friday.
Jesus, adding things in.
But
yeah, he did. At least Morgan did acknowledge that. Yeah, the legendary crafting stuff was way too expensive, I think. And they never did anything to change it, and they probably should have. So
I mean, they really should have had something for. Like an item like this. An item like this, I think, is great. I wish it were 252 or 262, whatever the max of previous tier legendaries were, instead of 249, which is like one step down from that. But it's still like, this is still like infinitely better than, you know, your options being spending, like on Area 52, which is a big server. Your options, if you wanted a ring, were like to spend 2,000 gold on a 190 ring. Or 30,000 gold on a 210 ring, or 30,000 gold on a 226 ring, or 30,000 gold. Like, it's just like 30,000 gold all the way up, and then it jumps to 90,000 gold once you get to the ones that people actually feel like, okay, I can do this.
So
like,
funny.
249 rings were literally 90,000 gold.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you can just like random crafters in trade check and make 249s for under 10,000.
That's hilarious. But yeah, so he 100% touches on sort of that idea that, like this stuff is, they missed the mark on the legendary pieces. Cool.
Question for you. If we have things like, if they took the legendary system that we have now with like the catch-up item and everything like that into 10.0, how would you feel about it?
I'd hate it.
You'd hate it?
Yeah, I don't want, when you say like they basically just bring legendaries forward into 10.0 and we keep sort of the same thing, I don't like, I will tell you as a Mistweaver, the legendaries themselves are always uninteresting. Like they have not done a good legendary for a Mistweaver, like ever, I'd say. And maybe that's me just being jaded. You're talking
about Sinister Teachings. This is a good legendary.
I'm
joking, but yeah.
I mean, like I think the idea of Sinister Teachings was interesting. I think it just turned into like Mistweaver, like the idea of needing to have CDR to make another ability better was interesting. The problem was, is their implementation of it made it very easy for us to just get max value out of it by doing nothing different than we typically would do. So yeah, so I mean, I hope we don't have legendaries in the next expansion. I really don't. I am perfectly okay going back to an era where there is one legendary, your entire raid group works together to get one person. Like I am perfectly fine with that type of system where like we go back to like Valinar's, like it's gotta be a crafted one. So like Valinar, Shadowmourn, Antish. What are some of the other crafted ones? I don't remember.
The rogue daggers from
the
from
rogue daggers. And, yeah. I'm not a fan of like glaives. Like I'm not a fan of like dropped legendaries.
Glaives are dumb.
But like anything that requires like your raid to work together to build something for one player, I'm cool with that. Right.
Yeah.
I hope to God this whole crafting legendary crap is gone. I hate it so much.
Fair enough. Brewmaster has also not had a ton of like great legendaries. There's a couple that just like it's basically the keg smash shoulders. Like the keg smash shoulders are just like both expansions, it's been there, it's just been great, and that's the legendary you play. And then the other one is kind of whatever. But you know, interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. I like some of it, but also, yeah, it does add a lot of complexity for a lot of classes, just not really getting anything from it. And some classes getting completely broken by it.
Exactly. And it's an expansion wide thing. So the idea of like having a set thing you will equip the entire expansion, I'm just not a fan. Like, I don't think I liked like Azurite, like the neck you got, or what was the item before the neck?
The artifact weapon?
Well, the weapon was cool, I guess. But like even then, towards the end, got a little like, I don't know if I want to keep dumping stuff into it. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm not a fan of like slots on your gear, like not changing, I guess. And maybe I'm just old and I don't.
That's fair.
I don't know.
I do think it's like, if they do bring this back, the cost has to be something that they fix.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like 100%. The legendaries have been too expensive all expansion long. They're still going to be too expensive for the max rank ones. They had to have done, they needed to do something about this in 9.0, not 9.2, but yeah. But we got about 5 minutes left. We got a little bit about season 4 in Morgan Day's interview.
We do. Yeah. There's one more thing I want to touch on before we get to that. And this is just be very quick and maybe we can spend some more time. Morgan did talk slightly about some of the new systems they put in place with this raid, which I thought were very interesting. So the tuning stuff. Yeah. So he spends actually probably one of the longer explanations and talks of a question, but the question seems very benign. It's like, what change you made this expansion as a whole team to better support the race for World First was sort of the question I think that triggered this. But he talked about taking a lot of the scaling tech that they used to scale the overall zones. Basically you could level any zone and wherever that health would do it, and applying that to the raid where they could now say like, if this is the first boss health, then like we want to literally scale difficulty by health or damage that the bosses do like to the end boss. And so like the first boss feels like a first boss, the end boss feels like an end boss, and the ones in between. So
they kind of set the difficulty curve for the raid, and then they move the whole thing as a unit up or down to try and tune the raid, which actually, like, if they use this, I mean, they use this for Sepulcher does kind of explain why we saw so many bosses just eating 10% health nerfs, you know.
Right.
They overshot the whole curve by 10% effectively. Exactly. Whether that being due to overestimating how quickly people would get tier sets or underestimating how difficult these bosses would be without them. That's a very interesting perhaps consequence of it, where like if they miss now on the position of that difficulty curve, then the whole rate is off, right, instead of, you know, a boss being off. Like, well,
And the other thing too is that we saw a lot of nerfs to bosses before teams even got there too, which is sort of another idea of like them adjusting in it. So I thought that was a cool point of it. And then the other point too is, I think they talked about, they set up a more direct line of communication to the top guilds. So in the past, you'll hear like Scripe or probably Max say something about, oh, we emailed Blizzard and they told us this, right? And what they ended up doing was actually setting up a Discord where all the teams progressing world first were a part of it. So Blizzard basically talked to them as a unit. There was never this like one team has different information than another team. It was sort of always sort of just disseminated at the same time, which I think is always fair, which is good. Final point we've talked about season 4 was that he talked about the ability for them to make changes quicker and faster because of COVID was actually a good thing. Like the fact that working from home was now like a normalized thing that people do, it no longer required you to like wake up or like it's 9 o'clock at night and like the EU is, or I guess it's over. Yeah. Like drive back into the office, make a change at like midnight, 1 o'clock. Cause EU found something when they started their raid day. Right. It's now like, hey, you can just open up your laptop at your house, make it the change real quick and you're good. So,
yeah.
It also meant they had better support too from their other teams. So they would be able to better, like if they had like a server problem, the server team, they'd have to wake somebody up, right? They did a little bit better there. So, sorry, that was just quickly on sort of the communication and stuff like that.
Yeah, I forgot about the tuning thing. That's a really interesting thing for the like contextualizing this tier. Like, it's very easy to imagine them taking that difficulty curve and having a good difficulty curve. And like, there's outliers mechanically, like Helandris, where it's just a very punishing boss. But then on the whole, they just had the difficulty curve set, you know, 5 to 10% too high, and you know, needed to bring that dial that just the whole raid down a little bit, which is honestly kind of what it felt like doing heroic. Right. And the difficulty of heroic is they just like, obviously now we have 4 pieces, it falls over, but it's been much more difficult than previous tiers.
No, that is for sure. That is for sure. So yeah, so that was the I think that was the one interesting part there. And then I guess the final sort of 2-3 minute thing we have here is they did talk a little bit about season 4 coming up. And basically a couple things, no real new information about season 4. I think some highlights are tier sets are not going anywhere in season 4. There won't be like a new thing to collect. Also, gems, Sanctum of Domination, gems are not coming back. We will not have to deal with those. So we're thinking tier sets will stay around for season 4. And also gave sort of a timeline, which very vague timeline, but basically I think the interviewer like asked, are we looking at like, is this like a typical 6 to 9 month patch? And Morgan basically was like, yeah, that's what we're shooting for. Like no hard set dates yet, but we can sort of infer from his response that, you know, September-ish timeframe this year will be the start of season 4.
I would be very happy if they just released 9.2.5 before that, and then they gave us like 9.2.8 or whatever for the actual season 4 stuff, just so that we could get cross-faction rating sooner.
Yeah, that's true. That would be
I would love to get that in sooner. I'm actually in the process of setting up our Alliance Guild. We're going to have things to figure out on the Warcraft log side to figure out how to support people being in 2 separate guilds for the purposes of tracking progress and things, because you're going to end up in situations where like there's 11 people on Horde and 9 people on Alliance, and that is just like which guild gets the achievement. I'm very excited about the cross-faction rating thing. And I know a lot of people in my guild are like, yes, I get to play, you know, the Alliance race that I played for, you know, 15 years and then had to swap Horde to actually continue raiding. So there's just a lot of excitement around that. And I really hope that they get that out sooner rather than later.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But yeah, no, I think that was the final point, is that, you know, that this season should be sometime this fall with it'll be interesting to see how long they're tracking season four to last, right? Because we're going into an expansion announcement here in April. Like, you would think they'd want to get the expansion out within the next year, right? Yeah. Like, so, like, if you do it that way, then in another year we'll see, like, next spring we'll see.
So this patch came out at the beginning of March, effectively, like March 1st. So 6 months from then, if they're looking at 6 months for a season length, right? Yeah. They're going from month three to month length. So September, like you said, beginning of September. Another 6 months from that would be, of course, next March.
That's actually pretty – yeah, that's true. That wouldn't be too bad timeline-wise.
Yeah.
So 6 months of season four, which I don't – like, it depends on what season four exactly is, but – it might not hold people's attention. Yeah. We might still end up with that whole.
It is encouraging to me that he commented that they're still figuring out the raid difficulties and everything for this, because I mentioned this last week. I don't think it's going to land super well if people are, like, coming off of, you know, mythic sepulcher progression and jumping. They're not going to want to jump immediately into mythic whatever season four progression.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly.
In the same way. So I don't know if maybe it would be like a staggered release where they release heroic for like a month or two and then they release mythic, or if they just tune it differently to compensate for the fact that, you know, we still have mythic sepulcher to progress through.
Right. So. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. It'll be, more info on season four probably needed, but it sounds like, we're looking at, you know, at least another 6 months of sepulcher and then whatever season four is before the next expansion, which will be a nice breakup, regardless of what exactly it is. It'll be something new, so we don't end up with a year.
Better than just 12 months of sepulcher, right?
Like, yeah, no, yeah. Believe me, one of the only times I've ever quit WoW for more than a couple weeks, or, you know, missed a couple weeks of WoW, is WoD, and I quit for like 4 months. I stopped playing. I can't zone in and kill Garrosh for I can't kill Garrosh for the 12th time.
Yeah.
Or like 30th time, right? Like, I can't do it. So
cool.
I think that's it then.
I think that's it for our show today. So thank you all for watching and or listening. As I mentioned, this Morgan Day interview, there's a lot more details. You can get the link from the show notes. There's a link up on Wowhead that will also be in the show notes with the highlights of it, and I would highly recommend going and actually listening to that. And of course, if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Pico Sorelli, you could do that by going over to our Patreon at patreon.com/PicoSorelli. And then, of course, come and join the Discord. It is back to its normal state now after the April 1st shenanigans. And so the lounges are all back to their old names. And Brew Lounge is, of course, still the best lounge. But maybe. Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week.
Bye.